Professor Pervez Hoodboy is a Pakistani nuclear physicist, essayist and political defense analyst, and is a professor of nuclear and high-energy physics and the head of the physics department at the Qaid-e-Azam University in Islamabad. He graduated and received his PhD from MIT and continues to do research in particle physics. He received the Baker Award for Electronics in 1968, the Abdus Salam Prize for Mathematics in 1984, and has authored various scientific research papers in peer-reviewed journals. Professor Hoodboy is also a prominent environmentalist and social activist and regularly writes on a wide range of social, cultural, and environmental issues. He is the chairman of Mashal, a nonprofit organization which publishes Urdu books on feminism, education, environmental issues, philosophy, and modern thought. He is also a strong supporter for peaceful use of nuclear technology in Pakistan, non-nuclear proliferation, and nuclear disarmament, and has criticized the nuclear programs of the U.S., Israel, Pakistan, and India in national and international forums. In 2003, he was awarded UNESCO's Kalinga Prize for popularizing science in Pakistan with TV serials and his film The Bell Tolls for Planet Earth, one honorable mention of the Paris Film Festival. I spoke with him last on Takes on the World in March 2009. I reached him again today in Lahore, where it is now 24 minutes past 10 o'clock. Good evening, Professor Hoodboy, and thanks for staying up for the late interview.
Well, thank you. It is slightly late, but that's okay. A slight correction on your introduction.
Yes.
I am not particularly enthusiastic about nuclear power. I need to think a little more about that.
Good to hear
that. I am definitely against the bomb, but nuclear power, well, I am not enthusiastic, not after Fukushima.
The situation there seems to be out of control, and the government of Japan doesn't know how to handle it. That's
tough one there.
Well, I'm glad you added that, because I took that, of course, off the internet, but I'm glad you brought that up, and I share the questioning of the safe uses of it at this point in time, certainly. Getting into the question of Pakistan, and there's so many things to discuss. A little over 2 weeks ago, U.S. NATO helicopters attacked a Pakistani military base on the border with Afghanistan, killing 24 Pakistani soldiers. Not only has President Obama refused to apologize for that attack, Washington has implied that it was the Pakistani military that fired first. And this unfortunate event, just the latest in what has become a series of unfortunate events involving Pakistan, in which Washington has denied responsibility, has triggered several serious responses on the part of the Pakistani government that seem to have, and military, that have plunged the already fractured U.S.-Pakistan relationship past the breaking point. How do you see this developing?
There will be many more such unfortunate incidents. And I think that we're coming close to the breaking point. That means where the United States and Pakistan will have to part ways. Now, let's take this particular incident. 24 Pakistani soldiers get killed, and they've been attacked by NATO helicopters, and those helicopters have come again and again. This is not a drone strike. There are many drone strikes, of course. And, it is something that is amplified and re-amplified by the Pakistani press. The Pakistani army has taken a very obvious position on this, and it at one level seems to be completely understandable, because after all, when your own soldiers are killed, then you have to react. On the other hand, you have to look at another fact as well, that Pakistan is in a state of war against its own internal enemies, and these internal enemies are the Taliban. The Taliban have killed something like 6,000 Pakistani soldiers. They have targeted Pakistani military officers. They've set off bombs in Pakistani markets. They have done assassinations, they've blown up schools, and none of that has drawn very much reaction from the Pakistani state. So this particular incident that you're alluding to is indeed being used very much in the media here in Pakistan. On the other hand, all those other atrocities committed by the Taliban, the Pakistani Taliban, have received very little attention, although those attacks have been upon mosques, upon hospitals, upon ordinary citizens of this country. So there's something more than meets the eye.
Well, one of the things that, from observing from over here, is this all situation all stems from the intervention against the Soviet Union back when Carter was the president, in which the Taliban was created in Afghanistan in the aftermath of internal fights among the Mujahideen who had been fighting the Soviets. But is not the Pakistani Taliban really an extension of this war and the U.S.? Was there a Taliban presence of any significance in Pakistan before the U.S. Invaded Afghanistan?
Well, let's go back to history. 1979 is when the Soviet Union invades Afghanistan, and then the United States teams up with Saudi Arabia and Pakistan, and together they create the great global jihad of history. It's unprecedented, because before that, there had never been a situation where Muslims had gotten together to fight off the infidels. But here, helped with the CIA, helped with active U.S. involvement, there were advertisements that were placed in newspapers and journals across the world, Soldiers of Fortune journal as well. So here, these three countries, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, and the United States, get together and they create a force, the Mujahideen, which then starts functioning, starts fighting the Soviets, and eventually succeeds in forcing the Soviet Union to withdraw. And then, because of its own internal situation, the Soviet Union eventually collapses. Now, definitely the U.S. is to be held to blame, and blame it as much as you want. But I must also blame my own country that once the Soviet Union collapsed, then wasn't it time to disband the Mujahideen and say, thank you very much, you can go home, to Algeria, you can go home to Egypt, to Saudi Arabia, or wherever else you came from. That turned out not to be the case, and in fact, Pakistan kept them, rather our military kept them, and it used them to fight the Indians in Kashmir, secretly, of course, and then to establish its hold in Afghanistan. And all this was fine, and things were going very well until 9/11. Then comes the pressure from the U.S. Are you friends or are you foes? Are you with us or are you against us? And Pakistan says, rather, General Musharraf says, we're with you. And so we break with the Taliban. Pakistan breaks with the Taliban, and then the Taliban become our foes. At least part of them become our foes. And then there's a new dynamic that then evolves subsequently. So, yes, of course you can blame the United States for being in this part of the world, but I'd say that the current mess that we Pakistanis are owes as much to America as to our own internal policies and our hatred of India and our desire to have strategic depth in Afghanistan.
Well, it seems, again, that the U.S., wherever it goes in the globe, pays little attention to what is perceived to be the national interest, positive or negative, of the countries where it is involved. And so, for example, where it seems so obvious that Pakistan has this concern for India, and India is also attempting to establish itself in Afghanistan. The United States has actually made statements in the past, like dismissing the Pakistan-India conflict as something that's not very interesting and it's not very important. And obviously this must stir resentments and cause internal divisions within the Pakistani government as well as the military.
Well, there's no doubt that the U.S. is blinkered in the sense that it was looking only on how best to fight the Soviet Union. On the other hand, our military, the Pakistani military, is blinkered because all it is interested in is how to expand its power politically and also how to confront the Indians. So it has created a climate of hysteria, I'd say, within Pakistan, in which kids are taught that we are embattled, we are surrounded by India, by its proxies, and so, and of course there's Kashmir, which really belongs to Pakistan, but which India has taken over. And so the military has established itself as the dominant force in Pakistani society, and that military continues to control much of politics. It has enormous economic interests within the country itself. I mean, the generals are fantastically rich, and it's a very sad state of affairs. It's going to get worse because as the Americans prepare to leave Afghanistan, and they must, I feel they must, but on the other hand, you have our generals here in Pakistan who are just waiting for the Americans to leave so that they can extend their power and influence into Afghanistan and gain what they call strategic depth.
So this is why they will continue to play their games with the Taliban in both countries and with, for example, the Haqqani network and every other non-national group, let's say a terrorist group, terrorist organization, that has in fact been killing Pakistanis as well as U.S. and NATO troops in Afghanistan.
Oh, yes. The Haqqani group, which you mentioned, is considered a strategic asset by Pakistan. It's there to attack American troops and eventually to establish a Taliban-type government in Afghanistan. And that Taliban government will be, they hope, our generals hope, will be subservient to Pakistan. Well, a lot of people say that's really far-fetched because once the Taliban establish themselves again in Afghanistan, they're not going to look to Pakistan, although Pakistan had been their benefactor. And so, who knows what will happen. But looking from the point of view of the Afghan population, if things are to revert to 1996 and subsequently, it's going to be very, very bleak. Much as I am opposed to the Americans being in Afghanistan, and yes, they are a foreign power, they're an occupying power, I'm also very worried about the people of Kabul, the people of Kandahar, the people of cities over there who have established some kind of civilized life over there. And once they are rendered defenseless, well then, I'm just hoping that what happened in 1996 is not going to repeat itself. That was a time of bloodbaths, of people being just hanged from the lampposts, and the kind of crude justice that the Taliban administer. I wouldn't even call it justice. What they do to women, what they do to homosexuals, what they do to just very ordinary people is just so cruel that it's an atrocity.
You're taking a position like this in Pakistan as a Pakistani, also puts you in jeopardy. No, given the climate that seems to be developing there of intolerance, of greater intolerance.
Look, that intolerance has got nothing to do with the Americans. That has to do with the rise of religious fundamentalism in Pakistan. And that's been on the rise in the last 20 years or so, 25 years. To give you an example, the governor of Punjab, Salman Taseer, he wasn't a particularly nice man. I never met him. But he was a guy who didn't have very many ideals, except on one thing. He felt that this Christian woman who had been accused of blasphemy, and she lived in a village, Asia Bibi, really shouldn't be put to death. And the minimum penalty for blasphemy in Pakistan is death. So what he said, and this was, he was encouraged by his daughter, who's a liberal-minded person. He said that maybe Pakistan ought to revisit its blasphemy laws. And as soon as he said that, he became a target. And so his own security guards, one of them, in fact, pumped 22 bullets into him. The other guards just watched as this guard killed him. Now, the astonishing thing for you, not particularly for me, is that that guard became a hero. Mumtaz Qadri, that murderer, is now being defended by the retired Chief Justice of the Lahore High Court. And this is just one indication of how far we have gone towards religious fundamentalism and religious madness in Pakistan. So quite apart from what the Americans might be doing or not doing, there is this this demon, this internal demon that we are now confronted with.
Well, as you mentioned, it seems that the United States has given all kinds of hints by openly criticizing Pakistan. Then we recently had this U.S. ambassador from Pakistan, Hussein Haqqani, had to resign because of a memo that was leaked in which allegedly President Zardari was going to try to make a deal to create changes in the Pakistani intelligence services and military that would be more friendly to the U.S. But it doesn't sound like Zardari would have been able to do that.
I think that the ambassador was trapped into this by this person. Mansoor Ejaz, who doesn't seem to have any particular ethics or morals, but quite apart from that, I'd say that, it's probably true that the ambassador and President Zardari had approached the Americans saying that they're really scared that they're going to be overthrown, that the government's going to go out because after the Osama bin Laden incident, after he's found in Pakistan and next to an army training institution, that they are in conflict with the army, and so it is possible. I can't say that I know, but I say that it is possible that what was alleged was true. Now, what one has to understand is every civilian government in Pakistan is really scared of the military. Half of this country's life has been spent under martial law and under the direct control of the military. And so it's possible that, Hussain Haqqani, the ambassador, may have written to Mike Mullen. It's possible that the allegations are true. But on the other hand, I think that the treason committed by, the generals against Pakistan has been of infinitely greater magnitude. We've launched secret wars. We've harbored terrorist groups. And this has been with the knowledge of the people at the top in the army.
Well, this is what is kind of bewildering, is because we have incident after incident in which it seems obvious that certain events could not take place, certain attacks could not take place without inside information that would only come from the military. And that, as you say, people have been protected. And now, with the U.S. moving and openly moving to break ties with Pakistan, this seems to be setting the stage for another military coup.
No, I don't see a military coup as immediate. Of course, I could be wrong on that. But I do see a break in the ties between the U.S. and Pakistan. Now the military is really serious about going on the war, about breaking ties. I don't necessarily mean war path, although that too could come with time. The fact is that the United States is enormously unpopular in Pakistan. It's man, woman, and child, you could say. It would be hard to find a single person in any city, and in fact across the country, who would be willing to say that, I think the U.S. has done right in Pakistan or in South Asia. But that's not just aimed at the U.S. What's happened is that there's been an enormous cultural and political change within Pakistan itself. And whatever the U.S. might have done, and I certainly disagree with many of its policies and what it started doing in 1979 at the time of the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, yet there is a growing fundamentalism within Pakistan itself, and the youth have bought into that. They bought into that because it's in their textbooks, it's in their education, it's in the public media. So the situation is complex. The bottom line is, I fear we're headed for a confrontation.
With whom? With the United States?
With the United States.
Pakistan is one of the countries, a handful of countries in the world that has nuclear weapons, and it's once in a while it gets discussed here. There's more of a discussion of Iran's potential, whether Iran is or not, is or isn't trying to get nuclear weapons. Iran is the focus when it comes to nuclear weapons, and yet here we have Pakistan, your country, with nuclear weapons, and if the United States is considering a potential military confrontation with a large army. Pakistan is one of the largest armies in the world, as I understand it. And this would be kind of insane on America's part. I mean, to encourage this.
It would be completely crazy, both on your part, the United States part, as well as on our part. But when have wars been rational, sane? Never. The fact is that, Pakistan is a nuclear country, and the United States does not have the capacity to locate those nuclear weapons, to take them out. With all the technology, with all the surveillance equipment that it has, it simply doesn't know where they are. It doesn't even know how many there are. And if any could slip out, from this way or that way. And so we're locked into a situation which is far more complex than most people think.
Well, yes, go on, yes.
It would be crazy for the U.S. to go to war against Pakistan. It would be still crazier for Pakistan to go to war against the U.S. But although I don't say that we're heading towards war, we are heading towards confrontation. And confrontations generally have the propensity to escalate.
Well, it would seem that from the point of view of the Pakistani military, that it believes the United States needs it more than it needs the United States. And the United States has provided billions of dollars to the Pakistani military, which has made a number of people wealthy, but it seems to be acting on the principle that the United States needs it to continue its war successfully in Afghanistan. So now it's made threats to shoot down U.S. planes. It's stopped NATO trucks again at the border, US supply trucks. They keep getting burned and attacked. This is something that has made it difficult for the United States to pursue that war in Afghanistan. They have to find other supply routes. And so in this sense, Pakistan, the military may believe it holds the upper hand, no?
Well, the military does hold the upper hand on the civilian administration. It has indeed stopped the NATO supply line. It has asked the United States to vacate the base from where drones were launched, the Shamsi base in Balochistan, and the U.S. has indeed vacated that, or is in the process of vacating that. And, well, so now the Pakistani military, after having, had a somewhat duplicitous relationship with the U.S., is now emerging from that and is having a steady, clear line. And that steady, clear line is, we don't want to have anything to do with you. Let's remember that WikiLeaks played quite a role in here. The Pakistani military was calling for drone strikes on certain areas where the Pakistani Taliban were located, and these Pakistani Taliban were attacking Pakistani army installations. And the U.S. was perhaps acquiescing and perhaps rejecting some of those requests, whatever. But the fact is that the Pakistani military, General Kiani, was requesting drone strikes on Pakistani territory. And now all that became exposed after WikiLeaks, and the Pakistani military has withdrawn itself, and now the military leadership has to show to the rank and file and to the lower-level officers that it is actually not pro-American. And in that reaction, it has gone to the extent that, well, all right, it's got the links with the NATO supply line, it's got the Americans out of the air base and so forth. So now they're being forced to take a definite position.
Well, this would be popular, of course, with the Pakistani public. Given
enormously.
Yes. I mean, standing up to the U.S. in this situation and forcing them to evacuate a base. And then we see the embarrassment when a U.S. drone is forced down or shot down in Iran, and the U.S. President Obama asked for it back, and, of course, Iran doesn't give it to him. It looks like the U.S. has lost what they call face in the region, that nobody, there's a pretense of having some kind of a victory in Iraq. And even there, it's difficult to predict what's going to happen, but certainly not what the United States had planned before 2003.
Oh, yeah. Iraq was a defeat for the United States. they've managed to somehow extricate themselves from there. It's been a lot of lost blood and treasure. Afghanistan is going to be also a defeat. Well, they will not have achieved their goals. On the other hand, this is not going to be Saigon. It's not going to be the helicopters leaving from the U.S. embassy out of there. So the Americans have thought of what lies beyond 2014. There are going to be bases. In fact, there are mega bases in Afghanistan which will remain there even after 2014. And there are going to be aircraft carriers, of course, where from which American planes can be launched. And there'll be space surveillance, and there'll be drones and so forth. But all this will still amount to just defense of the rear rather than a victory.
Now, how much has the situation changed in Pakistan since the election of Obama? We had, while Obama was speaking about ending the Iraq war, saying that the proper war where the U.S. should be is Afghanistan, he also openly threatened to expand the war in Pakistan. And, of course, the number of drone strikes that he's launched is 10 times as many as President Bush launched. How much has this change in the U.S. administration, the accelerated attacks by the U.S. in Pakistan, turned the situation more negatively, created more support for fundamentalism within Pakistan than say was existed under George Bush? Or would it have developed in the same way without the acceleration of U.S. intervention in Pakistan?
Well, look, let's focus on one thing, and that's the drone strikes. Now, those drone strikes have had some civilian collateral damage, I mean, and that's entirely condemnable, and it's awful that even a single innocent person, a non-combatant, gets killed. On the other hand, it's a fact that drones are, well, relatively more pointed instruments. They are less blunt than artillery or airstrikes, and they've had the effect of substantially disrupting the Taliban in Waziristan. And as a consequence of that, the Taliban have migrated to the inner regions of Pakistan. And now that the Americans are leaving, and now that the Pakistani military is seeing the Taliban once again as its strategic assets, they're very unwilling to move in North Waziristan and to do any kind of military action. Of course, now after this incident in Salalah, in which 24 Pakistani soldiers were killed by NATO forces, that's out of the question. Now we are at a breaking point. But earlier on, if you think about the kinds of demands that the Americans were making and which the Pakistanis were resisting, well, those demands were that Pakistan act against the Haqqani group. And no, there was no willingness on this side, because these are our boys, and they're going to then secure the future government of Afghanistan for us. So the drone strikes have had an impact, but it can never be that aerial attacks will ever win a war. That insurgency is going to go on, and our generals are looking towards the future.
We're coming down to the end of the hour, and is there any bright prospect, anything that you want to add that we could look forward to over here, or is this going to be, are we on the threshold of just a more disaster and more catastrophes and more loss of life without any resolution?
Well, look, I don't think it's Afghanistan which is important. What's important is Pakistan.
Yes.
We have the nukes. We are a country that's 180 million, and Afghanistan is what, maybe 30, 40 million people? It's got a very small economy. We have the big economy, and I am fearful of the future. I don't like what I see out there, and I don't want Pakistan and the U.S. to be in confrontation. And I hope I'm wrong that we're going to see an escalation in the next 6 months or so. I hope I'm wrong on that.
Well, Professor Pervez Hoodbhoy, I want to thank you very much for spending the time with us this evening in Pakistan. It is a grim situation, and I hope look forward to speaking with you again. And thanks for sharing your thoughts, and take care.
Bye-bye. Good night.
Bye-bye. Take care. Mm-hmm.